Mixtape Podcast.
Yeah, what it do? Mobbing with the crew, nothing new. I thought you knew, thought I was falling off. Blessings keep on falling through. Oh, don't panic, dog. Bro, wait, boo, I can't lose. No, I can't lose.
What's good, Knicks fans? I am Josh So Focused.
I'm French, the bro host, and we would like to welcome you to
the Knicks Take Podcast.
This is episode 85.
And this is a weekly podcast where we bring you the biggest Knicks news of the week.
Make sure to follow us on our socials. You can check us out first on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter /X by searching for the Knicks Take.
Also, make sure you check out our website, KnicksTake.com.
And lastly, if you love what you hear, please subscribe to us on whatever platform you're watching or listening to us on. Hit the thumbs up button and notification bell if you're watching on YouTube. But most importantly, please share this with any fellow Knicks fans who might enjoy the show. And now the show. I got this pointed the wrong way. I'm doing bad.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I'd say you're doing bad, but not as bad as me. I don't know if everybody can hear me. I know it's been a while since you've heard my voice, but
yeah, how was Aruba?
Aruba was fantastic.
I can't even ask you how your week was. I got to ask you how Aruba was because you was there for like a week and a half, right?
No, I wasn't there for a week and a half, first of all. Only 6 days.
Oh, okay.
And it was pretty good. Got in the ocean, got in the pool, got in the hot weather, and then flew back to good old New York where I had to come back to some cold, some wet, rainy days.
Yeah. But you came back to playoff basketball too, though.
Yeah, where, you know, the temperature there for playoff basketball, it swings very wildly sometimes. Last time that I was here, we were going into the last week of the season, mm-hmm. and you recapped that what happened in this last week of the season, how the seeding has played out, how everything has come together, a lot of storylines mm-hmm. that have developed in the playoffs.
You ain't gonna ask me how my week was? That's crazy.
No, I wasn't going to ask you. That's crazy. We got a lot to go into. I was really just going to say, hey, I sound terrible because I, you know, I'm dealing with some allergic reactions or whatever. But
yeah,
you know, you wanted to get into that. But sure, yeah. How was your week?
I ain't doing nothing. I was just chilling. But I ain't going to lie. It's been an eventful few weeks. I was going to talk about like the beef between Drake and the whole music industry, but I'm like, hey, that's going to be a whole 45-minute discussion.
Nobody turned us on to listen to hear your thoughts on Drake.
I'm just saying, this is the moment in time that we're in right now.
Yeah, it's playoff basketball. Everybody is here to watch or listen to us talk about playoff basketball, especially playoff basketball featuring the New York Knicks.
Yeah, I was looking to hear your reaction to the 50-win season, mm-hmm. second in the East. You got to go over the 50 that real win quick season, before we do talk about the playoffs.
The 50-win season that my co-host and brother, mm-hmm. French, predicted when the season began. And, you know, me and you kind of agreed that, yes, that was a possibility. Mm-hmm. We didn't think that it was a possibility with Julius Randle missing significant time. Mitchell Robinson missing significant time.
We couldn't predict anything that happened. The trade for OG. Right. Like, yeah. We thought that the kids was going to take a big step this year.
Yep, and they were going to guide us to that 50-win season.
And the kids ain't even here. Nope. None of them. Quentin Grimes gone. I thought he was going to be, like, the biggest impact player coming in mm-hmm. just for Dante DiVincenzo to take his spot. I went back and rewatched the episode where we were just predicting, like, before the training camp and everything.
And how wrong were we?
I was pretty accurate, I don't know, but the one thing that I got wrong was Dante DiVincenzo for sure, because I thought he was going to be the least minutes. He's going to receive the least minutes out of all the rotation players. I thought RJ was going to come out and have a huge year.
I mean, he started off well.
Yeah, and then he got What happened? You got a migraine or something? You got a little headache, tummy tuck? And then, not a tummy tuck, my fault, RJ. I don't mean to be disrespectful.
I don't know why we try to disparage RJ Barrett, who has had probably his best season of his career since being traded from the New York Knicks to the Toronto Raptors.
He was balling.
Emmanuel Quickley, who started off the season well, didn't really get much better as a Toronto Raptor, just kind of continued his positive positive play as a Toronto Raptor.
Yeah, he's been moving for them. I ain't gonna
lie. We also traded Quentin Grimes, somebody who has his own playoff moment for the New York Knicks. We traded him away and got Bojan Bogdanović and somebody else. And we
got Alec Burks back.
I mean, that was somebody else, but and I don't know. I'm not still not sure if that was Alec Burks that we got back. Yeah. So it was a lot of stuff that transpired this season. A lot of things that you thought we could take from last year's playoffs into this one, and literally now there's only two things that we can really bring from last season to this season, maybe three. Actually, no, we'll get into the three or the four actually that of the things that we can bring back from last season, from last postseason to this one. And yeah, when you talked last week, we didn't know who the Knicks were going to face in the first round.
I remember hoping for Miami.
Right.
Everyone was saying that Philly was going to be the matchup, so I assumed Philly's at home and Embiid's playing, so even though he's a little hobbled, I don't think he's going to lose to Miami. And I knew that Philly didn't really want to face Boston in the first round, so I just assumed that we was going to face Philly. But I don't think I said that on camera, though.
Yeah, I don't think you did either. You kind of was like, oh, either one of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we...
Our mother's in the studio. Shout out, Mommy. Hey.
You made a prediction to her, I'm guessing?
Yeah, like the day before, I was like, either way, I'm taking Knicks in four. And then when we watching the game, we start seeing like both of these teams have flaws that we can exploit.
The Philadelphia 76ers versus the Miami Heat.
Yeah, the playing game. And while watching that, I'm like, I kind of don't want to face Miami just because even though we can take them, I see how dirty they play. And I'm waiting for the moment that like they're going to knock out Embiid's knee. And I'm like, oh, they actually didn't do it. But the reverse actually happened. Jimmy Butler got hurt.
Yep.
And now he's out for a few weeks. And Philly ended up winning that game barely. And Embiid looked hobbled in that game as well. And we're going to get into that more this episode. But I definitely was thinking that Philly's the tougher matchup. But I think because Embiid's not 100%, we can definitely take them. Even if he was 100%, I feel like we could take them.
But I didn't, when I watched that game, I don't know if I came out of it saying, oh yeah, Philadelphia is definitely the better team. I just thought whoever comes out of it, you can take your positives and you can take your cons from it, right? I came out of that like, okay, if we get Jimmy with the Miami Heat, right, at the time, because we didn't know how the full extent of what was going to happen with Jimmy. Mm-hmm. If we get Jimmy with Miami Heat, I need to stop playing with Eric Spoelstra's name, because I was expecting Philly to... Thank you, sir. I was expecting for Philly to show up, like to start that game, and I didn't feel like they did. So I was like, oh, okay, Miami's throwing zone at them. Philly doesn't know what to do. By halftime, I was like, oh yeah, this is it. It's over. Now Jimmy Butler hurt his knee at the end of that first quarter, but I had watched the whole second quarter where it's like, okay, Jimmy is not. He's a little hobbled, but you know. If he's playing like this, Philly don't got a shot to come back in. And the second half came out and Jimmy was looking less Jimmy. Embiid was looking more Embiid. And it just, to me, was like, okay, we saw both sides of both teams. We saw the bad of Philly. We saw the bad of Miami, especially when Miami can't rely on Jimmy Butler the way that they could or should. So in the middle of that game, I was like, okay, either way, it's gonna be a tough out. I think that the Knicks have answers for both of these teams. I don't think either one of these teams are better as currently constructed, as it's currently viewed. And then after the game, all of the information started coming out, like, dang, we're this close to having Miami with no Jimmy Butler.
Even without Jimmy Butler, I feel like Miami would have been tougher than Philly. Because they still play hard. Like, you've seen the record without Jimmy Butler, they still are over 500. Listen, they're still like...
But that's why I said you have to give Philadelphia its credit, because that was a game where I was completely sure that, okay, Miami came, they took control, they have the momentum. They had the momentum for nearly in the entire game. And Joel Embiid isn't looking good. It seems like they've figured out an answer. And whether the whole team of the Philadelphia 76ers aren't, maybe you want to say they're not as tough as Miami. They're not going to play all the time like Miami. The equalizer is Joel Embiid, who exerted his force in that fourth quarter and turned the game around. Mm-hmm. And if your team doesn't have guys hitting shots the way that Miami needed their guys to hit shots, Tyler Hero wasn't great. You rely on guys to do things and they're not doing them. All they need is Embiid to be like, all right, that's it. Game's over. So you do have a point, but you have to also acknowledge the fact that Philly has a way to just get past that with just the superior talent of an MVP level player like Joel Embiid, which, yeah. So after that game, Miami played against the Chicago Bulls played the Atlanta Hawks. The Miami Heat played the Chicago Bulls.
And I picked Chicago to beat them too. I thought Chicago been playing, like, because the last game of the season, they gave us a run for our money, took us to overtime.
Yeah.
And without Jimmy Butler, no Jimmy Butler in Miami, they playing in Chicago, I believe.
No,
they played in Miami.
They played in Miami because Miami played in Philly. I gotta say, I was there right there with you.
Mm-hmm.
No, Jimmy. We're not gonna talk too much about the games because this is the Knicks podcast.
Yeah,
but I watched that game. I started.
It impacts the Knicks though, because
it does because
you would rather Miami play Boston in the first round.
It's they're on two different tracks right now until you get to the conference finals. So it's not too important right now. But Miami beat the Chicago Bulls and played very well considering that they didn't have Jimmy Butler. I went into them like, well, they already know that they're, if they got to wait weeks for Jimmy to come back, their playoff season is pretty done. But they like the Knicks don't think like that. Went into Miami, stayed home at Miami and said, come on, Chicago, we're going to pack you right back up and get you right back out of there. So that's what happened with that other game. And then we go into game one.
At MSG.
At Madison Square Garden. Knicks have the home court advantage for round one.
Yeah.
Facing off against one Philadelphia 76er team.
And if you were watching on ESPN like I was, you had to wait for the previous game, which was a blowout. I think.
Why would you wait?
I'm just saying, like, this was the experience that the Knicks fans was going through for the first playoff game at home. Even though, like, I'm watching the layup lines and I hear how the crowd is so energized, the first playoff game, I'm like, I kind of wish I was there. Yep. But
yeah, you could tell. Every time we get to the playoffs, it's like this. That, other teams, you'll see fans streaming in the middle of the first quarter during a playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's not true, but like
Miami fans for
sure. During the lineup, definitely during the lineup. All right, the game ain't starting yet. As long as I'm there before the first buzzer sounds, that's how a lot of other arenas do.
Nah, not MSG. They had MSG, MVP chance before the even layup lines was going on. Like, they was going crazy.
They hadn't even announced the lineup. And it was already three chants that had been saying New York Knicks, yeah. MVP. But
like, let's go Knicks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And there was no fear that energy was going to go away. But anyway, let me give it to you. That game number one.
Coming into the game, Joel Embiid was listed as questionable. He was a game time decision. But as we all know, he was going to play. This is the first game of the playoffs. He not risking this. So the Knicks came into the game. Everyone's basically healthy. The only one that was on the injury report was Julius Randle, who we know is going to be out for the season. And to start the game, Josh Hart set the tone. You remember how it went? They got a few passes off. Josh Hart's wide open. Hits the three to start the game. And that was basically foreshadowing how the game was going to go. Little do we know at that point, because Philly's defense targeted Josh Hart so that he would be the odd man wide open every play, just like Miami did to him last year. And Josh Hart really didn't he made Miami pay a few games, like game four maybe in New York. He hit that clutch corner three. Yeah, but he wasn't really hitting, knocking down four threes like he did this game.
That's the main thing.
Off right the dribble, there. Too. Like, earlier this season against Cleveland, he hit that sidestep corner three. So, like, this newfound confidence of Josh Hart, we're starting to see pay off already in the first round of this series against the Philly team with the reigning MVP. Well, not reigning MVP, but he's been playing like MVP all season up until he got that knee injury. But Philly took an early lead this game, and B didn't look like he was hurt at all in the first quarter. He came out looking much better than he did in that play-in game where he was hobbled. He was falling on the ground after he hit free throws. Like, he just wasn't looking right. He probably got a shot in the knee. I was telling my mother, driving here, our mother, that he kind of was reminding me of, like, Willis Reed. You know how you hear about him, Willis Reed coming out the tunnel, getting a shot in his knee, and then energizing the whole team to play inspired basketball. It seemed like Philly was definitely using Embiid for inspiration throughout this game, because Kelly Oubre was playing out of his mind. They specifically targeted Jalen Brunson, so every shot that Jalen Brunson got, he seemed like he was sped up. Tyrese Maxey was getting a few blocks off on him. Kelly Oubre, like I said, was guarding him well, but the minute that Deuce McBride took the court and he started knocking down threes, playing with some defense, provided a huge spark off the bench, and he was the only guy that seemed like could match up well with Tyrese Maxey, who was knocking down layup after layup. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I said knocking down, but he was definitely just blowing right past OG every play. Not OG, but every Nick that was guarding him. Like,
he's very fast.
He's quick, and he's finishing with acrobat layups, play after play, Euro steps, yep, reverse layups, whatever he needs to do to floaters. Like, he's just finishing around the defense pretty easily while no one else on Philly can really get it going, except for Joel Embiid. And I believe this was in the second quarter. Joel Embiid went up for, like, this putback, or not putback. He threw it off the glass to himself.
Yep.
Dunked it, his first dunk since coming back from his knee injury, and he fell immediately to the ground and starts grabbing his knee.
Yep.
His eyes looked like he was eyes rolling back, like he was in some pain. I didn't know what was going on with him. I'm like, he looked like he was doped up a little bit, but we ain't going to talk about that. He looked like he was in pain. He came back in the third quarter. Well, before I even get to the third quarter, the minute he went down, that's when Deuce McBride came alive, Bojan Bogdanović came alive, knocking down threes. And the Knicks went from being down like 15, if I'm not mistaken, to taking the lead, then going up by like 10 points, 10 to 15 points. And then the third quarter comes, Joel Embiid comes back onto the court. I'm thinking he's done for the season. And he starts the third quarter and he comes out providing the same spark that he did in the first half. But late in this game, which is something that I took from the play-in game, because remember Jimmy Butler went down against Philly and he still played, but in the fourth quarter, he was basically a non-factor. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much exactly what happened with Joel Embiid in this game, because he was high impact for the first half. Third quarter, he came back, caused us some trouble. They came back, took the lead. And then in the fourth quarter, the Knicks just could, like, it was still neck and neck all the way to the final seconds, but Embiid didn't score a single point in the final quarter, if I'm not mistaken. And the Knicks defeated Philly 111-104. And it kind of looked like Philly gave up in the final seconds of the game, where they could have fouled and sent some guys to the free throw line. but they kind of just let them dribble it out. That's something that my mother called out before after the game. But what were your thoughts on this game?
I don't know if I would say, I'm going to try and go backwards and hopefully I remember everything. I don't know if I would say that Philly like gave up. It seemed to me like they were actively trying not to foul, but still get the turnover.
It seemed like that a little bit too.
So, because I don't think that there was anybody that they wanted to put on the line. Like, I think they were hoping, like, they think we're going to foul, but we're going to steal it, and we're going to... And a couple times they almost did, but the Knicks were just so prepared for that, that maybe they weren't prepared, but they were cognizant that was a possibility. Like, yeah, maybe they're going to try and have us keep it on this side, thinking that they're going to foul, and then we get a 8-second violation or whatever. You know, that was also a possibility. The Knicks just played it smart. And by the time a bunch of time had elapsed, it was just kind of like, okay, well, that didn't work. We kind of played into this too much. And now, you know, anything we do is still going to be a loss.
Yeah. And I feel like I spoke a lot just now, but I did not mention Mitchell Robinson once, did I just now?
Don't worry. We're gonna get to everybody. Everybody's gonna get their
Mitch, this game, he was wilding. Like the minute, cause Embiid, like I said, he was dominating. I don't mean to say this to Isaiah Hartenstein. Shout out to Isaiah Hartenstein. I didn't even tell you, me and mommy went to a meet and greet, got a signature on his hat right here. Come on now. Isaiah Hartenstein is nice. He's a nice guy. He took some pictures with us. But Embiid whooped his ass this game.
What was you saying about the hat?
He signed it.
He signed it.
I got my hat signed.
All right.
But
I was trying to get you to
shout
say
out
it.
To Isaiah Hartenstein. He's dope.
Trying to get you to say it into the mic.
They heard me. And they see it. Watch on YouTube. You go see it. But Isaiah Hartenstein really couldn't keep up with Embiid. The minute that Mitchell Robinson checked into the game, he playing him tough. He's tipping the ball away from him. He's getting like little deflections, causing him to have to throw up a shot late into the shot clock. Little things that's not going to show up on the stat sheet. He also got like 7 offensive rebounds this game. Because Embiid was hobbled, he's playing 10 times more aggressive. He had like this block, I believe, where he caught it and then threw it off Maxey, who was out of bounds. Like, just a lot of high IQ plays. He wasn't fouling. Mitchell Robinson was one of the MVPs of this game to me. Sure. If you wasn't watching the game, you wouldn't probably understand why, but he finished this game. Let me show you the stats. Sorry about that. He finished this game with 8 points, 12 rebounds, 7 offensive rebounds, 4 blocks, and he was a plus 20 from the field. Bogdanovich was plus 27. Miles McBride was plus 37. And these are all bench players. Compared to the bench players on Philly, Nick Batum, who played 26 minutes, he was a minus 20. Paul Reed, who had a lot to say before this game, talking about this was the matchup that they wanted because the Knicks are easier than Boston. Yeah, you're easier than Boston too. You only had 4 points, minus 21 from the field. And the only other bench players didn't even score this game. Buddy Hield and Campaign. This is Buddy Hield's first playoffs. He only played 11 minutes. He looked like he was rattled a little bit. He's normally a knockdown shooter. Maybe we'll see that later on in the series, but I don't see this being a long series. Well, so we might not get to see some Buddy Hield magic.
Let me make some other comments on the game.
Talk to me.
I think you had a couple things out of place. Deuce McBride's impact was, I don't know if you made it clearer, so I'm gonna just make it clear. Deuce McBride's impact was before Embiid went out of the game. His impact was immediate and instant. When he came in, Embiid wasn't in the game. But when he came in, he also didn't come out.
Right.
Deuce McBride was the momentum changer in the first half.
Yeah. Because it definitely looked like it was going one way.
And with that, I'm going to ask you a quick question before I get back to Deuce. At what point in this game did you know that the New York Knicks were going to win?
When Josh Hart hit the opening three.
So the reason I asked, I swear,
as soon as he hit that three, I'm like, oh yeah, this game is ours. Because if he has the confidence to open a game like that, so Josh Hart.
The cameras aren't going to show this, but my mother was like, oh yeah, Josh Hart, when he hit that three. And then you clarified the opening three.
Yeah, the opening three.
And she said, what? The opening three? And it's funny because when you were just talking about the game just now, I was like, everything that I was thinking I was going to say about this game, like if I was to talk about the game the way that you just did, you kind of hit on in different ways. And you said something about that opening three. Mm-hmm. And I was like,
he set the tone.
Me and you are aligned. Because as soon as he hit that three in the game, I'm not going to lie. I said, oh, yeah, we're going to win this game.
Because he's never shown confidence like that.
To open game one with the shot that you know that they're going to give you and to just confidently knock it down,
yeah,
it showed that this is not Josh Hart from the Miami Heat series.
Yep.
Now, I'm also going to say when Philly went on that run in the first quarter, I was like, oh, yeah, maybe that's not a great thing that the best offense that we can get right now in that entire first quarter is open Josh Hart threes, which he wasn't hitting.
You know,
like after he hit that first one, he missed.
Yeah.
Right. So it was like, oh, wait, Jalen Brunson don't got it going. Dante DiVincenzo don't got it going. Isaiah Hartenstein is missing his usual bunny shot, you know, the tip shot that he does, a floater that he does.
Yeah.
If the only good offense that we could get is Josh Hart open threes, maybe that was fool's gold, right?
Here's why
that open three.
Okay.
Him hitting that open three is like, oh, okay. Yeah, if we're playing good, if the Knicks play how we normally see them play, mm-hmm. yeah, that Josh Hart three is a threat, and it's going to make it easier for the guys who are – that's not what happened in this game. But then – to get back to Deuce McBride, and I know you had something you want to say, so don't forget it.
Mm-hmm.
When Deuce McBride came in and started knocking down his threes, and it's like, okay, all right, we're gonna win. We're gonna win because this is one of those games. Because it wasn't just Deuce; it was Deuce, it was Mitch. But Deuce, we needed that offensive. We needed that other guy to hit threes,
mm-hmm.
right? Somebody beside, like they're gonna respect Jalen Brunson no matter what. But you need somebody who not only is going to shoot the three, but is a legitimate threat. Josh Hart is still not a legitimate threat. He's going to have to do this every single game in round one. Deuce McBride is a guy who we've seen throughout the entire season. You better respect him. Like, Josh Hart has been sketchy. Some games he's not pulling the three. He's only driving. Some games he is shooting a three, but he's missing.
Mm-hmm.
Deuce McBride has been consistent in hitting his three. And if you came in, all right, we're going to treat him like he's Josh Hart, and he is automatically showing you in his first game where he's getting serious minutes in the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
and he's doing that, we got to change strategy right away. Josh Hart, we have evidence in the playoffs and in the regular season. This is not going to be consistent. Deuce McBride, he's doing what he's doing in the regular season. He's been consistent.
Here's why
we can't switch off that.
Here's why I disagree with your initial take that Josh Hart being the main scoring option isn't a good thing for us, because I don't feel like he's going to have to do this every game, mainly because we're not going to see this version of Jalen Brunson every game. And Philly is a completely different team when Embiid's not out there. Like you said, when Deuce McBride checked in and Embiid wasn't on the court, it wasn't due to the injury. It was just due to him playing the whole first quarter and needing some rest. And immediately, in those minutes, the Knicks took away the Sixers' lead, and then started to build on it in the minutes that Deuce McBride and Boyan was out there.
Mm-hmm.
And once they started to get a little rhythm going and went on a run, they started to build the lead and went up double digits. This is without Jalen Brunson. And this is without Josh Hart, really, because he didn't go off on a scoring run until like the fourth quarter, I believe. He hit a few threes early and he was driving, but he wasn't like the main offensive option in the first half, I don't believe, but
who was
it? Was the bench. It was Deuce and it was Boyan. Mm-hmm. And the game's coming up in the next week. Jalen Brunson is going to get more comfortable as this series goes along. He's played against taller guys and was able to demolish them. He scored 60 against Wembanyama, who's 7'4". A lot of those points were on Wemby, too. Even though he's a rookie, I don't believe that Nick Batum and Kelly Oubre is going to shut him down for an entire series.
Listen, smart.
They came out hard for the first game, and then Josh Hart matched their energy. Deuce McBride matched their energy. Boyan matched their energy. Mitch was one of the best players in this game. So I just feel like you're not going to need 4 for 8 from Josh Hart every game, but you are going to need him to shoot. And as long as he shoots, he's going to be played differently.
You're giving me a lot to respond to.
Okay.
I'm going to try and remember everything. First of all, I'm not saying that you need Josh Hart to go 4 for 8 every game in order to win the series. I'm saying for them to not... The play that they're doing to Josh Hart where they're leaving him wide open, they cannot do that to Deuce McBride because you have a season's worth of history to suggest that's a mistake. And then you try it for a game in a playoff series, and then if he can do that in game one, in the biggest game of his career to this point, outside of the few minutes he got, you know, against Miami and against Cleveland, where he only was there for spot minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Is he's coming in for big rotation minutes now. And the first opportunity that you give him to prove that he can bring his regular season shooting into the postseason, he does this.
Mm-hmm.
He shot, what, 5 for 7 from 3? The first time he does it, okay, we can't do that anymore. He's gonna win the game. He's going to win the series for the Knicks. We have to respect him. Josh Hart, there is evidence to prove that you can leave him open. He's not going to do the 4 for 8 for the rest of the season. That was my point for that, right? He's going to have to do four. He's going to have to shoot as well as he did today for them in the next round to not leave him wide open. And mm-hmm. the reason I make that point is he's going to make the defense easier to stop Jalen Brunson for the rest of the season, for the rest of the series, right? It's always going to be hard. Jalen Brunson has not had you. I wanted to tell you, regular season, throw it out, right? In the regular season, Jalen Brunson struggled against the Philadelphia 76ers, specifically against Kelly Oubre when he guarded him, mm-hmm. which is why they started off with Kelly Oubre guarded him throughout this whole game.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen really much evidence in this game and any time that they've matched up to show that Brunson is not going to at least be super frustrated when they have Kelly Oubre on him. And then you have the added fact of they're going to move away from Josh Hart to give extra help on him. Mm-hmm. So he's already difficult with Kelly Oubre. Now you make it almost impossible with the help. Go ahead.
Quick point. Being that Josh Hart is the one player on the team that they can help off of, because every single player on the Knicks shot a 3 who wasn't a center.
Right.
Who played this game. And I feel like that's intentional. Coaching, like Precious Achiuwa, I'm thinking like, why did he even get to play this game? Because we could use some extra big bodies, but Precious can't be counted on to reliably hit an open 3. And Josh Hart being the open man is not going to work in this series because Josh Hart kills you in so many different ways.
I agree with you.
He's a great driver.
Yes.
He's a great passer.
Yes.
Rebounder. Even if you leave him open, he's going to find a way to get an offensive rebound. So it's counterproductive to keep this as the game plan moving forward, especially if what I think is going to happen in game 2, I think it's going to be a blowout victory. I think they're going to have to switch the game plan.
Listen, in the first half, Josh Hart went 1 for 5 from the field with his only field goal being a 3-pointer. I agree with what you're saying, but within their... Let's not defend Josh Hart is a secondary strategy where he's going to decide to drive, but we're already going to be in the paint, and therefore, you know if all the guys who are able to stick to the 3-point shooter,
mm-hmm.
you have a Mitch or you have Al Hartenstein already out there, and their spacing is not really that far out either, So there's a way to defend it to where you have to make Josh Hart shoot three. There is a way to employ defense where you have where if you want an open look, you're gonna have to Josh Hart is gonna have to prove to us that he is willing to at least shoot the three. He doesn't have to make them, but he has to at least shoot the three, which was the problem that against Miami Heat series. Josh Hart wasn't even shooting the three. They were leaving him wide open, and he's trying to drive. We don't need that Josh Hart, which is why when you brought up his confidence to take the threes, that's very important in and of itself because it does open up the driving lanes for him. It does open up the passing lanes for him. But even still with that, if Jalen Brunson is finding struggles on offense, you need one other guy.
Mm-hmm.
And usually that one other guy is Dante DiVincenzo.
No, it's always somebody random. It's always multiple efforts from multiple guys.
Correct. Like, but usually the one other guy is Dante DiVincenzo. Or if Josh Hart isn't scoring like that on this game, Dante DiVincenzo is the guy that's scoring like that. And you need one other guy.
Mm-hmm.
And most times when it's like that, it's Deuce McBride. Sometimes it's Bogey. Sometimes it's you know. And you know what? Let's just go through the evaluations for the game real quick. Because I want to get into everybody, even the guys who didn't get minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to start off with our main guy, Jalen Brunson,
mm-hmm.
who we both said did not have a great game.
I don't say that. He didn't have a great game.
He had a great game?
I think he had a great game. I just think he couldn't score efficiently. But he had the lowest minus out of the whole starting five lineup. He hit 5 for 6 free throws, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, got a steal, drew a charge. Like, he still had an impact on his game, even though he was 8 for 26.
There's a wide gap between having an impact and great. We need to have a whole episode discussion on what great is, because you say great trade. Jalen Brunson had a great game. This wasn't a great game from Jalen Brunson. That's what I'm saying. It wasn't a great game. I didn't say it was a bad game.
Okay,
or
I'm saying it
game.
Wasn't a bad game. Sorry, that's what I mean to say.
Pick your words carefully, sir.
Because I feel like he had the biggest impact outside of Josh Hart in the starting five. Well,
he went 8 for 26 for 30%. He shot 1 for 6 for 17% from three, and he missed a free throw.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, though, if you don't say all that and include his 5 turnovers for the game,
mm-hmm.
Yes, you have a great point. He still went out there. He fought. He drew charges. He got 7 rebounds as a point guard who is, you know, negligibly 6'2". You mm-hmm. might say he's actually 6 foot. And he had 7 assists. And he had 22 points. Like,
and
if
he
just
won
say
the 20, challenge.
22, 7, and 7. Right. And that doesn't show up in the stat sheet. But
that's what I'm saying. He had himself a good game still.
I'm not saying he had a bad game. I'm saying it wasn't a great game from him. And you, if you don't want to say he had a good game because of how poorly he shot, you have reason to say so. I certainly am not going to be like, oh yeah, he had a very good game. Like, no, if you're going to say he had a good game, you have your reasons. And if you decided he had a bad game, you had your reasons. It wasn't a terrible game.
Would you classify?
He's not going to have too many more games in the playoffs as bad as this one. Would you say that?
I feel like he matched Embiid. Like,
no,
Embiid had 29 points, but he was 8 for 22. He took 12 free throws, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. Like, they both had the impact of a star in that game, even though they weren't scoring like stars. And all the shots that Brunson took were shots that he took all regular season long. He just got blocked or rushed it a little bit to the point where he couldn't get comfortable. Outside of that, there's not much that you can say about Jalen Brunson's game that was negative outside of the 5 turnovers.
I mean, that's part of the game.
Yeah.
you didn't bring up Joel Embiid's turnovers. He only had 2 compared to Jalen Brunson's 5.
Oh, 2. You're right. My fault.
Yeah, I know. he only had 2 compared to Jalen Brunson's 5, and those 5 turnovers were pretty bad. Like, you know, and the Knicks, I believe the Knicks won the turnover battle over the Philadelphia 76ers because it was matched up. It was 11 to 11.
What about the rebounding, though?
But if Jalen Brunson has a few less turnovers, this isn't as close a game as it is either.
In the fourth quarter, Brunson also hit some key baskets.
I wouldn't say
like
that.
He impacted the game down the stretch. That's why I feel like they matched each other out, because Embiid didn't do nothing in the fourth quarter.
Yes, I agree with you there. But he didn't do anything, not because... I think that the defense on Joel Embiid was stronger than the defense against Jalen Brunson. Like, Jalen Brunson was missing shots. I'm not saying in the fourth quarter. I'm saying throughout the overall game. Joel Embiid was doing whatever he wanted on Isaiah Hartenstein. He was doing whatever he wanted against OG Anunoby. And the Knicks were not employing, you know, like, the whole defense was built to stop Jalen Brunson for the Philadelphia 76ers, but I don't feel like they executed it as good as some other teams could. And Jalen Brunson got to his spots, and Jalen Brunson missed some of his shots when he got to his spots, except in the fourth quarter.
I feel like they both had the same types of defenses.
Joel Embiid was hitting his shots when he got to his spots. He was hitting his shots. And when he wasn't hitting his shots, it was because Mitchell Robinson was blocking him or was not letting him get into the paint, was contesting. You know, and it was basically, okay, we have Mitch for Joel Embiid. They had Kelly Oubre on Jalen Brunson. Maybe I should equate it out a little bit.
Yeah, it's
because Kelly Oubre,
if not worse for Brunson.
Kelly Oubre was getting the easiest steals by just, my arms are long, my body's long, all I have to do is reach over you to poke the ball out. And then it's a foot race, and he was winning the foot race.
And Brunson's also being shadowed by another defender, so he's seeing double teams damn near every time he sees the ball.
Well, Joel Embiid was too.
Embiid was getting shadowed, but there was never an open man on Philly because of the defense that was targeted for Embiid.
No, there was.
Every single play, there was an open man, and it was Josh Hart most of the time, or OG Anunoby. Like,
and Joel Embiid had...
They made sure that Brunson was seeing two people at all times.
Joel Embiid had 6 assists. So you can't say that he wasn't generating open. I remember at least 2 or 3 shots that, because the Knicks doubled, Embiid made one pass and got the assist. Like, he was waiting for them to double him so he could get the assist. And he makes passes that Jalen Brunson can't make because he's so tall.
Mm-hmm.
So, there is a level of difficulty in being Jalen Brunson over being Joel Embiid. With that being said, I'm just comparing when Brunson got to his spots, he was missing. When Joel Embiid got to his spots that he created, both of these guys usually create their own open shots. When he got to his shots, he wasn't missing. He was making his shots. Like, you had to block Joel Embiid in order for him to have the game that he did. You had to push him out to the three-point line to make him have the game that he did. You had to make him do that turn around, throw the ball off the backboard, stuff that he does, he's not going to do in every single game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to make him show that he's the best. And he still scored on that. And you know, he injured him, like, re-injured his knee because of it. But, you know, given what Embiid could do in this game, I think he did all the most that he could do. And there's a testament to the Knicks to why Embiid still scored as much as he did. Jalen Brunson could have and should have had 30 in this game, considering, you know, how many of his shots that he got to take, it just didn't go in tonight.
So what would you grade him for this game?
You know, B minus, you know, C plus. The 5 turnovers really steer me towards more of a C plus than anything else, because it was very uncharacteristic to see him not only miss shots and not be efficient, but to also just turn the ball over.
But that's not on, like, we got to give the defense some credit sometimes. Like, he's facing 100%. Incredible defense, and
but it was the same.
It ain't like he's missing a whole bunch of open middies. Like, he's getting blocked.
When you start doing the same turnovers over and over and over, you know, you as the point guard have to adjust and be like, we're not going to let that happen anymore. And instead, it happened 3 times, you know, 4 times. And that's why he ended up with 5, you know.
It wasn't 6. It stopped eventually.
Next up, Dante DiVincenzo, who, you know, I said it, he didn't have a good game. I don't think he had a bad game either. I don't think he had a bad game.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he played reasonably.
He had the lowest plus minus on the starters.
It just, the things that we need most from him to be a threat from wherever he is behind the three-point arc, he was not that. He went 3 for 10.
Mm-hmm.
Two made threes, which, yes, but we've been used to him shooting 15 threes in a game.
Mm-hmm.
12 threes, 13, 18 threes.
He only
shot five, right? And a lot of that was a testament, again, to the Philadelphia 76ers defense. And part of that is also because of the whole, we're not going to respect Josh Hart from behind the arc, which is why that Jalen Brunson making the tough shots, like, that's so important. Jalen Brunson making the tough shots, Isaiah Hartenstein being a threat, which we're going to get to Isaiah, very important to the Knicks' offensive success.
Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia 76ers shut all that down. Jalen Brunson wasn't able to make those difficult shots. Dante DiVincenzo was not able to take as many threes as we know him to make. Isaiah Hartenstein wasn't missing his floaters. And the best option on the offense was the Josh Hart open three. When really we need to, usually we'll see them pass the ball around, and somehow Dante DiVincenzo was wide open for a three, and maybe he'll make it, maybe he'll miss it, but this was not that game for Dante. He didn't really make much of an impact. He did have some plays that were really impressive, but overall, you know, a very quiet game for DiVincenzo.
Yeah.
Hartenstein, everybody was like, yo, he has to start. He's way better than Mitch. I don't see why Mitch should start. You know, he can't defend out on the perimeter as good as Hartenstein can. It's not even close. Isaiah Hartenstein is better than Mitchell Robinson. And honestly, you know, it's not going to happen. Hartenstein is going to start game two. But if Tibbs was like, yo, we're going to start off Robinson, he's back. You know, he's got his conditioning back. He's our best defender against Joel Embiid. If that was the move that was made, I don't think anybody would complain. He was the best defender against Joel Embiid throughout this entire game.
Yeah.
Isaiah Hartenstein, who sounded like he was prepared for the Joel Embiid matchup, instantly found out that he was not prepared. Embiid was getting fouls on him throughout the game. He was very effective against Isaiah Hartenstein. Isaiah Hartenstein wasn't able to turn the tables when it came to the offensive end because he wasn't able to really. He had a great, great pass in this game
to Brunson.
Like, it's not a pass that anybody can really make. Maybe Jokic, you know, but it was just, you know, I don't see many people making that pass. But even with that, that was maybe the only highlight pass he had. Like, sometimes you like, oh, maybe Hartenstein can get 8-9 assists tonight because of how the offense runs. We haven't seen that from Hartenstein in a long while, back before his tendinopathy issues in his Achilles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if I want to say Hartenstein had a bad game, but it's just ineffective. Dante DiVincenzo, ineffective. Hartenstein, ineffective. Outside of some of his passing plays, he wasn't hitting his floaters.
You're a tough critic.
Because the playoffs are tough.
Yeah, like Dante DiVincenzo had a block of steal. He had two assists. Like, he impacted the game. He had two threes. I ain't going to say ineffective.
You know why I can say ineffective? Because when you look at the plus minus, DiVincenzo minus 23, Hartenstein minus 13.
He only played 24 minutes, though, and 18 minutes for Hartenstein. Because, so that could have came at a time in the game where Embiid was just dominating.
Why did they?
And
that
don't have nothing to do with DiVincenzo.
Why? No, it does. It does. Because if Embiid DiVincenzo was out there playing effective minutes, his minutes would have gone up.
He was playing effective minutes. He just wasn't as good as other players that were playing. Like, for example, there was plays where DiVincenzo was matched up against Embiid and Embiid didn't score.
You don't need to be so soft on our players, guy.
That's not soft. I'm just saying ineffective isn't the word that I would use. I would just say that they didn't have the best game, but DiVincenzo...
Who do you want to be a critic of? Because the Knicks were going to lose this game outside of three players. So who are you going to be a critic of? You're not going to be a critic of Brunson.
No,
you're
I'm
not
saying
being a critic of DiVincenzo.
More efficiently if he
You're not wasn't a critic of Hartenstein.
I'm saying they played a great game. We won the game. Why we got to be a critic?
There's
It's a 111 to 104 win. Philly was gassed at the end of the fourth quarter.
Correct.
They didn't have no life left to even go for another run. They didn't even want to foul at the end of the game. It seemed like this is about to be a sweep. And this ain't the time to criticize. Let's praise the Knicks.
No, we are praising the Knicks, right? Because
the evaluations don't sound like it.
Because you have to go from, okay, these are the most ineffective players. We go up to the most effective players. That's okay. Why I have it listed the way that I do there, sir.
Okay.
Because these were, you know, I had Brunson first because, okay, we got to start off with our guy. But then after that, DiVincenzo, like, he could have played less minutes and, you know, and it might have been better for the Knicks. I don't think so. I think DiVincenzo is best out there, even as a threat. But then who do you take off, right?
Why does there have to be a change is what I'm saying. Like, Isaiah Hartenstein's minutes came so that Mitch didn't play all 48. Like,
right.
I'm pretty sure Tibbs knows that Mitch is the better matchup for Embiid specifically, but you still have to have a starter in place, just like Jericho Sims would be starting during the regular season when we know Isaiah Hartenstein's going to be playing the bulk of the minutes. And Mitchell Robinson did his job. Isaiah Hartenstein did the best in his ability. He did knock down 4 for 4 from the free throw line. And we know in a game like this, this is going to be important free throws, especially with Embiid shooting 12. Normally, he's going to get at least 15. So, like, and Isaiah Hartenstein couldn't stop Embiid, but you could say that about 99% of the centers around the NBA. Still was able to contribute to this game. He got 7 rebounds, which is one less than Embiid. So, like, come on, give him some praise. It ain't got to be all criticism. We ain't got to just look at the bad.
Can we analyze accurately and truthfully?
That's what I'm trying to do.
Doesn't sound like it.
You saying that it was just all you bad said, for them.
I didn't say DiVincenzo it was all bad.
Was 3 for 10, -23.
Roll back the tape. Okay. Roll back the tape. I didn't say it was all bad. And I even listed positive plays for Hartenstein and for DiVincenzo. Well, I didn't, not plays, but
bounce pass to Brunson.
He hit a couple threes. He was 2 for 5, DiVincenzo.
Yeah, let's which not is brush not, over
which
that.
Is not terrible.
What that's I'm com- like it's that's not, like when you say not, when you leave with love and then you just start killing somebody.
I didn't kill him. I didn't kill anybody, really.
All right. So what's the grade for Hartenstein?
I just said that their play was ineffective, and I said that their play was not to the standard that their regular season play is, which is true. It's true. And did I say they were terrible? I haven't said any single player on the Knicks were terrible because none were terrible. But we're in the playoffs now.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the playoffs. So
what grade would you give him, Hartenstein?
I would say probably C. DiVincenzo, C. Mm-hmm. Nobody gets an F. Nobody gets a D.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Knicks won. So, all right, let's get past this because we running along.
Bogdanović,
good game. I would give him a B minus, and it's not like it was a good game. This is baseline, good for Bogey. I might even say better than good. Like he was active on defense. He looked good. He looked the Knicks had him on Batum, which was like a matchup that he can handle, defensively. He wasn't hurting us. He came in, was part of that bench unit that brought us back into the game and helped us get the lead. Bogdanović, very good game. Bogdanović, like you've been saying, French, Boyan is going to help us win a game or two in the playoffs. And my worry was, is he even going to make it to the playoffs with how bad he sometimes plays? He did make it in this last week of the regular season. He stepped up and showed he should be considered for rotation minutes. And this first game stamped that. Considering how poor that the starting five was playing.
Mm-hmm.
OG Anunoby, I'm gonna give him a B minus because when we go against teams with two superstar players and he is the wing, sometimes we'll ask him to guard those guys. But then you have a super fast guy like Tyrese Maxey, who OG is not going to be able to chase around the court and stay in front of him. That's an unfair ask of him. And Joel Embiid, who's over 7 feet, who's very long, who can shoot, who has moves inside of the paint. That's an unfair ask of OG Anunoby as well. Not saying that he can't handle those assignments, but those are two very different assignments on one team, and you're going to have to – you can't really ask him to do either one the justice that that we need him to do.
Wait, you're moving on to OG?
Yes.
Well, let me give my evaluations too. I got to give some grades because I feel like Bogdanović deserved the A- for the moments in the game where he was knocking down them threes, like where we were down and we needed them badly. And then Hartenstein, I feel like, should get a B-. But go ahead. OG now.
If we lost this game, there was no way you were giving those guys those grades. I'm just saying that right now.
Because
you would, they contributed to the win. They would have been D and F if we lost this game. And so that's not even fair grading to me. You know, I don't know. I can only give three players an A, right? And we're getting to that.
Mm-hmm.
OG is not one of them. You have anything you want to say about OG before I move on?
OG, I feel like offensively, yeah, we can't give him like a huge grade, but defensively, he was definitely out there. I feel like Tyrese Maxey made him look worse. But any other matchup that he was on, you can just see the impact that he was having on this game. So I wouldn't give him like a low grade. I'd probably give him like a B.
Okay.
He had a clutch three in the fourth quarter when Brunson found him wide open when they tried to rotate over to Josh Hart at the last second. So, yeah. OG helped us win this game. Bogdanović helped us win this game. Hartenstein, the reason why I gave him a B is because normally, if Embiid's in the game, he's fouling out all your centers for the most part. And Hartenstein played him tough, even though he couldn't stop him from scoring. He was able to hold it down until Mitch was in the game. He was able to still rebound. Like, he still had an impact on this game. He just wasn't as impactful as he has been in the past.
Top five guys who helped us win this game are Bojan Bogdanović, mm-hmm. OG Anunoby, Josh Hart, mm-hmm. Mitchell Robinson, and Deuce McBride.
Yeah, Josh Hart gets an A plus.
Josh Hart played very, I'm gonna say, bad in the first half. Outside of that first shot he hit that made me feel like the Knicks were gonna win this game, the rest of his first half was all bricks. But I will say throughout the game, his ability to get the rebound and push and force a fast break, even if it ends in a stop, the fact that the Sixers have to run, especially Joel Embiid has to run more, that is going to be very key in getting them tired and getting the Knicks easy and open looks at the end of the game. Josh Hart was very key, especially those threes he hit to end the game.
Mm-hmm.
That was clutch. That was key. That was important. One of the top three reasons why the Knicks won this game was Josh Hart hitting those threes at the end.
Yeah.
Go ahead, say what you got to say about Josh real quick.
Well, I've realized why we disagree so much, because I feel like you equate bricks to playing bad.
No, I don't.
Well, you just said that about Josh Hart. He played bad in the first half because he was bricking, but I feel like Josh Hart gets an A-plus because even though he went through stretches where he wasn't scoring efficiently, he was still playing with the same energy from the opening tip
he 100% does.
To the ending of the game.
Mm-hmm.
He was still playing defense, rebounding at an exceptional level. We finished the game with 13 rebounds. Like, he didn't let up on rebounding at all. He was still trying to get the guys involved.
Mm-hmm.
He got himself a steal. Yeah, I feel like from the opening tip to the end of the game, Josh Hart, you just felt his impact on this game the most out of any other player in this game. So I said this game at least 50 times, so I'm going to say one more time. This game, I'm going to give Josh Hart an A+.
No, you felt Deuce McBride and Mitchell Robinson's game more than anybody else.
Josh Hart played more than everybody else is what I'm saying.
100%. 100%. But that's more time to say, okay, when Josh Hart's on the court, he's making a difference.
He was. He shot the most free throws. He scored the most points in the game. You would definitely say he had the biggest impact.
He played the most minutes in the game. He played the most minutes in the game, which leads to that, to those things that you're talking about. When Deuce McBride came on the court, energy instantly switched.
Mm-hmm.
Knicks were down double digits. Deuce McBride gets on the court. They leave him open. Three. He makes a defense. He plays hard on defense. He's, as you said, the best defender on Tyrese Maxey, who was killing throughout the game. He comes back. He hits another three. Now the Knicks are within single digits. Even when they bring back Joel Embiid, Mitchell Robinson was out there. He was grabbing rebounds, grabbing offensive rebounds. I think he finished with 7 offensive rebounds at the end of this game. Joel Embiid went out. Knicks went on a run. Joel Embiid came back. Knicks are still on a run because Mitchell Robinson is you know, playing optimal defense on Joel Embiid, who's still going off, mind you, who's still doing stuff. But Mitchell Robinson, instant impact. Joel Embiid looked different when Mitchell Robinson was on the court. So that's the instant impact. When you show up on the court and something changes, the story of the game changes when you're on the court. Mitchell Robinson, Deuce McBride. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Josh Hart was on the court with them starters and wasn't really, you know, he was doing his part 100%. Like you said, you don't have to shoot well to play well. He was out there. He was playing okay. He still had some questionable things on the court that did not help the New York Knicks, especially when those other starters were on the court. But when the bench unit was on the court with Deuce McBride, with Mitchell Robinson, and he was on the court too, he didn't hurt. He didn't, you know, he didn't hurt anything.
Yeah, they beat up on the bench.
And he was the main, like I said, him getting that rebound and getting the fast breaks, definitely important. We're running a little long, so I'm going to breeze through the guys who are out of the rotation. Precious Achiuwa, 0 minutes. Alec Burks, 0 minutes. I thought Precious Achiuwa was going to get minutes as one of the guys who can make Joel Embiid's life difficult. I was wrong. I'm fine to be wrong because to end the season, Boyan played better than Precious Achiuwa. I do think that Precious Achiuwa will get rotation minutes, maybe not in this series, but some point in the playoffs if the Knicks make it past round one. Alec Burks, I think it's safe to say, is done for the season.
It's possible. I think Precious probably won't play a lot for this series just based on like the game plan for the Knicks. It seems like they're trying to get a lot of threes up. And the only players that aren't going to be shooting at all is Isaiah and Mitch. So I think the rotation, we should probably expect it to stay the same. Miles is probably going to get a lot more minutes just due to the Tyrese Maxey matchup. And maybe in the second round, we're probably going to see Precious. We're going to see Burks in the, if there's a blowout, though. So we could look forward to that.
I don't anticipate many blowouts in this entire playoff.
Game 2 is going to be a blowout, so let's get to
it. Every team from 2 through 7 were within 3 games of each other. Mm-hmm. Like this is not the normal NBA playoff situation. All right, so the rest of the... Well, we're going to go through games 2 through 4, every game that is scheduled and we definitely know is going to happen. We're going to do predictions, although game 4 will probably happen after the next time we record. Mm-hmm. We're going to start off with game 2, Monday, April 22nd, 2024 at 7:30 p.m., the only home game in these next 3 games for the New York Knicks in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, in Madison Square Garden, but it ain't going to be the only home game.
In the next 3 games.
No. Those are all going to be home games. Philly's just a heard you. 30 minute drive away.
Heard you. The New York Knicks, once again, facing the Philadelphia 76ers at home. I predict that the Knicks are going to take a victory and maintain a home court advantage. What say you, French?
Intrusive thoughts in me want to call a sweep so bad.
You already did, first of all.
I mean, yeah, so I did call it already. So, yeah, let's talk about it. Knicks is going to win every single game in this week.
I can't agree with you there.
I see game 2 being like, all right, I already said that game 2 is going to be a blowout. Game 3, I feel like, is going to be the biggest game this week, mainly due to the fact that I think after game 2, Embiid's going to be a little more hobbled. So each game, I feel like, it's just going to be more in the Knicks' favor.
I mean, I understand that logic, and I can understand why you would call the sweep if that's what happens. I don't.
Do you want me to predictions if Embiid stays healthy?
I'm going to say that the Knicks are going to win game 2 and game 4.
If Embiid's completely like how he was in game 1, I say the Knicks probably lose game three.
I wouldn't say he was completely healthy either.
I'm talking about as healthy as he is in game one.
Okay.
As if he's as healthy as he was in game one for the remainder of this series,
yep.
Game three we'll probably lose, and then game four we could steal, and then game five we close the series out.
Okay. So Knicks in five at worst for you.
At worst.
At worst. And then at best, Knicks in four.
Yeah.
I can't get to Knicks in four.
You heard it here first.
Just like you heard 50 games here first, 50 wins.
Feel me?
All right. All right, so then actually, we already did this. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, how many games are we going? Who's the X factor for us getting to, you think at worst five and at best four? So who is the most important person? I think you might have already implied who the most important person is for that.
Who would your guess be?
I feel like you just implied it's Joel Embiid's health.
No.
That's the X factor for whether even it's healthy, be five
they yeah. Even healthy, they losing this game. Well, not healthy, as healthy as game one. But my X factor is either Jalen. Well, does it have to be one?
That's
because
that
between it's I believe we have two X factors. Well, Jalen Brunson can't be the X factor. So Deuce McBride, I feel like, is gonna be the X factor of the series.
Okay.
Because I feel like the biggest threat is Tyrese Maxey.
Mm-hmm.
Since Joel Embiid's not healthy, we know what to expect from him. 20-10-5 for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
We have the front court to give him issues, to play him tough. So the only other guy that you really have to worry about is Tyrese Maxey, and the guy that we have that has the best chance of slowing him down, I believe, is Deuce McBride, because he can match him with his speed, quickness. He's one of our best point of attack stoppers on the team.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like without Tyrese Maxey getting off, I don't see how this series is going to remain close. So he's the X factor to me. What do you think?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe we need to discuss X factors. You said the game ain't going no longer than five, regardless of anything.
Because we have Deuce McBride. That's what I'm telling you. He's the X factor. He's the reason for my confidence in this series.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Jalen Brunson is the superstar of this team.
So if you're wrong about Deuce McBride, then
the series is going to be extended.
Then it's going to be five?
No.
Okay.
I'm saying it's going to be five if Joel Embiid is not completely as healthy as he was in game one.
Well, anyway.
If he's healthy, we still win it in five because we got Deuce McBride. If Deuce McBride is not proven to be the Tyrese Maxey stopper or whatever that I'm viewing him as, then this season could go, I mean, the series could go to six.
Joel Embiid is the X factor. His health and how well he plays that's the X factor for whether this game goes five or whether this series goes five or whether the series goes seven to me.
Okay.
I think the series, worst case scenario, the series goes to seven. For the Knicks, we have guys out there saying the Sixers are going to win in six, Sixers are going to win in five, Sixers are going to win in seven. And we saw kind of why they said that in game one. I think game one is the worst we're going to see the Knicks play. And even still, if that is the worst that the Knicks will play, that doesn't necessarily guarantee that the Knicks are going to win when they play better. And it's all based on Joel Embiid, his health, his ability to be consistent, and he can play better than he did in game one. So it's going to be, I think every game is going to be tough. I think that the Knicks, I think the worst case scenario is the Knicks win in seven, even with a healthy Embiid. I just believe in this Knicks team so much and believe in everybody's ability from 1 to 8 to be a factor in this series. You know, but if Embiid is unhealthy, the Knicks will clean it up in five. And I wouldn't. And if, like, we heard Embiid ain't playing for the rest of the series, that's when I would say, okay, now it's a sweep. But I don't see that. I think he's going to play at least one more game, and the Knicks will still, if they play very good, if this is their worst game and they play infinitely better,
mm-hmm.
they can beat Sixers in five.
In the same way that you said that this is the Knicks' worst game, I feel like this is one of the best Philly games because how often can you rely on Kyle Lowry to knock down four threes like he did this game?
He's going to do it again.
4 for 4 from the free throw line. Kelly Oubre was balling, but Nick Batum went back down to who he has been all season. He was the reason that they won that play-in game in the first place. because he scored, what, 20? He had like six threes in that game. Yeah. So I feel like they're playing above who they are. I don't see Kyle Lowry repeating this performance to the point where he's going to play 40 minutes.
He will.
We'll see. He was waived for a reason. Like, Miami saw this from him, they wouldn't have seen, they wouldn't have tried to buy him out and went for Terry Rozier instead. This is more of a Terry Rozier kind of night than it is for Kyle Lowry.
Kyle Lowry did the same thing against the Knicks last season.
Yeah, but
when he
last
played
year.
For Miami. So, I'm just saying that this ain't the first time that Kyle Lowry has played well this season. He's starting for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
He shot very poorly in the first half of this game. So all of that damage that he did in the second half.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he did this. And maybe he doesn't have a second half as good as he did in this game, but he'll probably have a first half better than he did in this game, which kind of equates out to him having a good game. And like you said about Nick Batum, he had a bad game. He might have a good game. And somebody else will have a bad game. Kelly Oubre has a good game. Maybe he'll have a bad game. This is how the Philadelphia 76ers are. Everybody from 1 through 8 is capable, just like the Knicks, of having a standout game. I just think that the Knicks' talent is better on our end outside of Embiid and Maxey. So that's why I have it Knicks in 5. Embiid is hobbled. So I think that's going to maintain. And Tyrese Maxey is not as good a player as he is without Joel Embiid. And yeah, I don't think Jalen Brunson is going to shoot as poorly as he did and turn over the ball as much as he did. So,
and I don't see Dante this being like what we expect from him in the playoffs. I think he's going to light up too. So
we'll see.
The more guys that get involved and the more guys that get comfortable with them, like I just don't see every game going down to the wire like this one. Just mainly because like Jalen Brunson's, when's the last bad game we've seen from Jalen Brunson?
Right.
This is probably the first bad game he's had all 2024 so far. We're in April.
I don't think it is, but it's up there with his top 3 or 4 worst games. So anyway, we're probably at like a minute 20 right now. I mean, hour 20 right now. So let's get it out of here. French, go ahead. You close
get
it up.
Get to bidding and a doing?
Yeah.
All right. So we'd like to bid you adieu. Thank you for listening to the Knicks Take Podcast.
Peace out, y'all.
Yeah, what it do? Mobbing with the crew, nothing new. I thought you knew, thought I was falling off. Blessings keep on falling.